All right, so my name is Samir, and I have Puneet with me. Puneet and we both are from CI team, that is a cloud integration team.
Hello everyone, this is Puneet here.
And today we are going to have a quick session for Azure Service Fabric. And in this session, we are going to, I think the screen is refreshing a little slower, so let me know once you guys see the second screen. Yeah, I think it's now up. Okay. All right. So the objective for today's session is an introduction to microservices as a concept, and we will look into the key principles. Now, yeah, Eco is gone. Great, thank you. So microservices, as a quick introduction, key principle, we talk about a stateless, stateful microservices concept. Then we will jump into the Service Fabric introduction and how to position Service Fabric with the Microsoft Azure stack. We will discuss about reliable services, reliable actor programming model, which is available with the SDK. And then we will have a demo with the help of Visual Studio and build a stateful service, deploy it on the local as well as on the Azure, and then try to we'll update it and just to demonstrate how easy is to update a microservice and using the Service Fabric. The main takeaways for this will be the microservices as a concept and how this architectural style can change a totally different way of development, and after that, maintaining the application. Now, the Service Fabric is implementation of microservices, and then how Service Fabric is making this microservices approach enable. Then we will have the various features available in Service Fabric, and then just to give you a glimpse, actually, how does Service Fabric is internally implemented in Microsoft for over a decade now, and there are products that are using Service Fabric for quite a long time now. Now I'm jumping into the next slide. All right, so what is a microservice? Some says it could be a new architecture style, or it could be a way how can you manage the complexity of the application. So my particular say for a microservice, because microservice doesn't have any predefined definition which is widely acceptable in all domains. So my say for the microservice is a service which encapsulates a particular scenario. In a nutshell, if I say microservice is an architectural style where a single application is mixed of or composed of a small independent processes. It could be processes, it could be container, it could be VM. But in a nutshell, a microservice encapsulates a particular scenario, and the only job for the microservice is to execute that particular scenario. Now, how to categorize a microservice? I can break the application in terms of architecture design, but how to say that I'm following the microservices architecture. So in this scenario, I would say some characteristics of the microservices where that tells, yes, you are following the microservices architecture style. So the majority and the main thing is about giving you the modularity, because by modularity, you make the complexity manageable. You can, if your architecture is modular enough, then you can manage the complexity associated with the entire design very effectively. And microservices, they improve modularity. So, okay, microservices provide modularity, but this thing is already there. You have three-tier architecture, you have SOA, but microservices is not SOA, because SOA integrate multiple applications, where the microservice is belong to one single application. So that's a very key differentiator where the open-ended endpoint comes into the picture, where SOA can integrate multiple business applications to give you one solution. microservices are, they belong to one application. Now, coming to the characteristic, we can say that you can design your application in a various subcomponents, and they are independent to each other. They can run independently, they can get update independently, they can scale independently, and that is the architecture for the microservice. Now, to provide the business solution, they also need to interact with each other. And that's where the protocol and interfaces come into the picture. Now, considering this thing will run over a network, over a distributed scenario, and that's where the protocol, like the general protocol HTTP, HTTPS, in terms of mainly actually, so REST over HTTP, that's how the microservices interact with each other. They have a unique name by which they can identify, they can be resolved, and every microservice will be managed independently, be it code modification, be it scaling, be it upgradation. So if I see at the very high level, this particular architecture style give me a benefit where I can, if I properly split the logic or the requirements into multiple segments, and then I can manage my application in better way and achieve very high scales. And that is what a microservice is doing. Okay, let me jump to the next one. All right, this one is my favorite. So I'll walk you through this slide just to provide a quick comparison of a three-tier architecture, let's say, and what problem domain microservice come and what problem it solves. And that's where the question comes, can microservices be a architecture style for all kind of applications? No. They provide you an option instead of going into the different design patterns. If your goals are aligning with the microservices design, you can definitely go for that. So let me talk a little about the monolithic approach for our application. So what happened, your application is a kind of a combination of different packages. Your application is containing of your business logic layer, data access layer, your GUI, rule engine. You club everything, let's say, in application one, and then put it on the VM. Now, considering the load of your application, the users are accessing it, you need to serve more requests. You start creating replicas of these VMs. And that's where you can see in this slide, I have three virtual machines running the same copy of app one. And it could be a behind of load balancer, as we see in the next slide. So you can cater the request. Now, in this approach, I can clearly see if I need to modify a business logic layer, let's say, which may be represented by the yellow square. I need to take down the servers. I need to update it in one single go. And during the downtime, the application will not be available. And this scenario may not work with the highly available applications. It may be a banking site. It may be online portal, where you cannot take the entire portal down to just update one single component. Considering it's a replica of the same application, all the VMs should run the same copy. In this scenario, you need to take down the entire VM set, modify it, and then put it back behind the load balancer. Now, again, these VMs are not utilized that much. They are running with a high capacity hardware, but they are underutilized, you can say, which is a general scenarios with all the VMs if you are running applications there, because the application are not using the resources 100%. If I compare this thing with the microservices application approach, what I will do, I will have my app one, let's say. I'll break the application components in a various modules called microservices that will represent a part of application or part of execution, provide some functionality. And then I'll start putting these modules into different VM sets. By this way, what I can do, I can have multiple copy of the microservices running on multiple instances of VM. That give me better distribution, as well as on the same VM, I can run a different application, maybe application 2 and some component of application 2. So on a particular VM, I may have one component from the application one or all component of application one and one or all or few components of application two together running on the same virtual machine utilizing the resources CPU RAM to the max, and that's where I can have the full functionality available with me, best utilization of resources, as well as I can independently upgrade, scale the component what I want. And this is the kind of a liberty the microservices provide to us. Let me jump to the next slide where a typical three-tier monolithic application, I just try to visualize the same thing which was in the previous slide. You have your web servers behind the load balancer, then you have a business logic and data access layer. To improve the performance, you put the cache servers before web and business and between business and data. That's a typical application approach. In a microservices application approach, I will break the application in the various components. Those component or services can be my HTTP listener, page content, my view engine, authentication module, reporting, and so on. Considering the load and considering how many instances I need for a specific microservice, I can spin up that many microservices for a type of component. Like in the slide you can see on the right hand side, I have three HTTP listener, two page content, and two authentication module. Now they all serve will be residing on a different VMs. Now let's say for a schema change I need to change the authentication scheme to scheme A to scheme B. In this scenario, I no need to down the entire application. I can just modify, upgrade the authentication microservice and the changes will come for the as a solution. The same goes for the upgradation, same goes for the scaling, and that's how I can achieve a very high scale for the application.
Okay, now that we have seen what are the different, what is basically a microservices approach, we'll basically now try to look into why a microservices approach is needed as such. You know, as we saw across different slides as shown by Samir, you know, we saw how these monolithic based applications can be deployed using the microservices based application by splitting your each type of you know, the content has such across different small services, across small part of the services. Now, by having this microservices approach, what will help over here is it can actually provide you an ability to version and update these microservices independently of each other, as we have seen earlier. Now, with the need of faster delivery of the features and the requirements that come in with the, you know, the customer requirement when it comes to an enterprise-based applications, we would also want to have agile-based development with rapid development and deployment that comes into play. And, you know, the microservices approach, you know, suits exactly into this kind of a scenario, and it helps, you know, having this features or our application capabilities delivering at a faster rate, and also achieving the hyperscale nature of the microservices based architecture, thereby, you know, having a scale at a level where each of the independent microservices services can be scaled without having to, you know, worry about the other microservices that are running within that particular application. And also, as we have seen, the resources that are running on my particular infrastructure where these microservices run can be best utilized, whereby, you know, thereby also helping in reducing the cost that is associated by having this microservices approach. Now that we have seen, you know, what is a microservices approach and why it is necessary, we will also try to look into what are the different types of microservices that are available. Now, there are mainly two types, which is the stateless and the stateful microservices. Before we understand what are these different types of microservices, we'll first try to see what exactly is a state. You know, has the state basically represents that it is nothing but the context that is associated with a particular application, or it is basically a data that is representing the application when it comes to a request and a response kind of scenario, or when it's basically having a logic that is associated with it. Now, with this, when it comes to the stateless microservice, it is basically nothing but an application that is running as a microservice, and then the data that is associated with this microservices can be stored on an external store like some Azure storage or on SQL database, something which is outside of the application itself. And that's basically what it is means by the stateless microservices. Like, for example, you have an, a web front end and it doesn't have the necessity to maintain its state along with the application that is running over there, and it needs to basically talk to some external store for maintaining its state has such. That's where you can think of this as a stateless kind of a microservice. Now the second one being the stateful microservice, which basically means that the each and every microservices that runs within this particular application tries to maintain or has the capability of having the data associated along with the compute itself. That means the data that is associated with the microservice application is residing close to the application, thereby having low latency when it comes to read and write operations. And this is basically achieved in a microservice based applications by having partitions and replications across the different infrastructures that are underneath where these microservices application run. A typical example that you can think of is basically a shopping cart or a user profile based service, which needs the capability to have a data and not having to talk to an external store each time when it needs to perform any kind of read or write operation, thereby having a faster access capabilities.
Thank you, Puneet. So after the very high level view for microservices, let's now jump into the Azure Service Fabric, which is implementation of microservices. Let me jump to the next slide. All right. And that comes the favorite picture for Azure Cloud, Azure Service Fabric. So Azure Service Fabric is a distributed system platform, and what it does actually to provide you a way where you can easily package, deploy, as well as manage the microservices. So if I read out all the options which are written here, like high availability, Service Fabric will provide the high availability for the microservices, health monitoring, replication and failover, and self-healing, and so on. By using the Service Fabric, you can implement the microservices actually. Now, how is it is implemented? It is implemented by, so this concept is not new actually. There are multiple other options available where you can use to create the microservices architecture style. One good example could be a Docker Swarmer, Cloud Foundry. In this, the same way, the Service Fabric uses and provide you a infrastructure where you can use your microservices, be it running on a process, be it running on a container, and use the built-in features where you no need to worry about the self-healing, the replication and failover, high density, high availability. And on top of that, you can have various flavor where you can deploy your microservices, be it on Azure, be it on the other clouds, or be it on the private cloud itself. Now the private cloud has two flavors where you can have your on-premise data center running Azure Service Fabric, or you can even use Microsoft Azure Stack, which is a private cloud offering by Microsoft, and run the Service Fabric on top of that. And this is how you can manage your microservices, deploy it, package it, maintain, and achieve the high availability. So next slide covers some of the services or products running within Microsoft for years actually, and that's where we can say it's a highly scalable, battle tested, and it's even it's a hyperscale actually. One of the example I could see, like Azure SQL Database, Bing Cortana, they are built on top of the Service Fabric, which is implementing as a microservice architecture, and they are highly scalable, and the same framework can be used to create the applications and have all the features available for self-healing, replications, auto-scale, and whatnot. Now, the next slide talk quickly about where to position Azure Service Fabric, because in the developer platform stack, let me run this first. Here we go. So in the developer platform stack, you have various options where you can run your application. You can run in a virtual machine, you can run in the cloud service, or you can run on in the app service. The moment you have the more control over the productivity, that's where the various choices will you have, as well as you can have a comparison between the offerings where you want to put the application. The highest productivity you can achieve in the app service, because there you need to just worry about your application code and logic, no need to worry about the underlying infrastructure and the updates and changes. The middle one is the cloud service, or you can say PaaS V1, where you have a flavor of both app service, full control on your application code, as well as control on the underlying infrastructure, where you can work with registries, you can run some processes, do some background job. And the last one is your raw virtual machine, where you own the virtual machine and run the application the way you want. And that's where you have the highest level of control. Service Fabric is on the middle layer, where you can see it's residing next to the cloud service, or sometimes even called PaaS V2. The Service Fabric will be considered in the compute, and that's where you can have more control over the application, as well as the underlying infrastructure. So it's a mix of both, and that's where if you want to do a comparison where the Service Fabric will reside, that's where the Service Fabric will reside, and sometimes even call PaaS V2.
Okay, yeah, thanks Samir. Now that we know, we have seen how exactly the Service Fabric provides different capabilities while implementing the microservices based application, and how it helps when it is basically, as a developer, where one needs to only worry about the application and all the other features are as such provided out of the box while you deploy this microservices based application. We'll also look into how do you actually go about implementing or deploying this microservices based application when it comes to the Service Fabric. Now, before you even deploy this microservices based application against the Azure Service Fabric, the first thing that you would want to do is define a cluster with different virtual machines or nodes defined under this particular cluster. And these number of nodes that will be running within this cluster can be from minimal of 3 VMs up to hundreds and thousands of VMs. Now, the scale that you would want to choose depends on the application requirement and the rate at which your application needs to grow when there are more load that is coming into your application. Now, this is the beginning point where you would first define a particular cluster with different VMs, be it any flavors of VMs that you would want to use, and you basically create a Service Fabric cluster, and that's where the deployment of the microservices comes into play. And for an example, let's say there are two microservices based application that you have created, and has in this slide it says app 1 and app 2. Now we plan to deploy this application in the microservice Service Fabric created cluster. Now the Azure Service Fabric makes sure that it is orchestrating these application microservices across different nodes that are running within this cluster, and the Service Fabric identifies which VM would suit better for these individual microservices, and it has the information on the resource utilization that is happening, and it has a brain inbuilt within this particular VM nodes so that it can actually keep capturing the metric information for all the microservices that are running here. And you know, suitably distributing these microservices across different VMs or the nodes that are running over there. As you can see, these app one and app two, the microservices that are associated with this application are distributed across this cluster, and there is no limit of the number of application that you can run. And even on a single node, there is, you know, you can basically run any number of microservices, replicas as such that is associated with that application as such. Now, Service Fabric takes this intelligent decision and routes these microservices and then places them accordingly in the Service Fabric cluster that has been defined over here. Now, let's take let's think of a real-time scenario. Let's say you have the Service Fabric cluster created, be it a physical VM or even the virtual machines that you have defined here. But what would happen if my if the infrastructure that is hosting this application has some problems, be it a physical problem or some problems within the within the VM itself, and what would happen to my applications, the microservice application that is running within there? Now, Service Fabric handles this intelligently, whereby it knows that whenever there is a particular problem happening in the node in the cluster, it makes sure that it distributes those microservices running within it and routes those microservices across other nodes, and thereby actually not affecting the availability, and application will not incur any kind of a downtime, even though there is a real-time kind of a problem that is happening with the underlying infrastructure over there. Now that we have seen this application that has been distributed across, as we have seen different types of microservices that can that exist, be it a stateless or a stateful. As we know, in case of a stateful, the state of our particular microservice resides next to the compute itself. How exactly does this Service Fabric take care of this stateful microservice? Now, this is one of the USP when it comes to this the Azure Service Fabric, which is unique among the other microservices-based architecture distributed application framework that is available over there, and it provides this capability of providing a stateful nature to this microservice by creating a primary replica of the microservices and keeping two secondary copies, or for that matter, you can even define this replica details in your application configuration, where you're going to deploy this package and then say that, okay, these are the number of secondary replicas I would want to maintain across in my application, and the primary replica is the one that is responsible to the application would read and write from that primary replica, and whenever there is a problem with the primary replica, the Service Fabric is again intelligent enough to bring the secondary replica into the primary, and that would be available to serve the state that is available with that particular partitioned replica. Okay, now that we have seen how those Service Fabric cluster runs and how the microservices based application is being deployed against this cluster, let's look into what are the different programming models that are available today using which you can actually code against and deploy your application in the Azure Service Fabric. Now, by having the Azure Service Fabric SDK, which is basically available for anyone to be downloaded, and it basically provides two type of APIs, which is called as the Reliable Actors API and the Reliable Services API. Now, this is the default APIs that comes along with the Service Fabric SDK. That being said, anyone is not constrained to use only these two APIs. Anyone can write a code using any language or any framework using which they are comfortable with and deploy the microservices based application using Service Fabric and attain the same or get the same capabilities that you would get by using the inbuilt APIs. It's just that by having the using your inbuilt APIs, it has a nice integration with our good friend Visual Studio, using which you can actually package and deploy this application conveniently, and also it provides capabilities of the stateful nature of a microservice. Now, with that being a programming model, so let's look more into what exactly are these different the APIs that we saw in the earlier slide. Now, as I said, reliable services. Now, these reliable services API provides capabilities so as to develop a microservice application for a stateless or a stateful service. And the stateful nature of the reliable services is achieved by using something called as a reliable collection. You can think of this collection as similar to a .NET based dictionary. And however, this particular collection is intelligent enough so as to maintain those particular states of that application or the service by creating those replicas as we saw in the previous slides over there. Now, what it also happens is by using the service, reliable service, you can basically, use your own well-defined code, and it also provides a way for having an entry point, and the lifecycle management becomes easier. And also, using the reliable services, you can plug your any communication model that you would want in your application, like has the HTTP, with the web API, or let's say WebSockets, or even for that matter WCF based scenarios as well. Now when it comes to the reliable actors, there's slight difference how it implements itself versus the reliable service. In case of a reliable actor, it is basically nothing but a single unit of execution. A single actor itself performs its own job, and it is nothing but it implements itself in a single threaded kind of a model. Now, each actor as such is instantiated by its own ID that is representing that particular actor, and there could be multiple actors that is running your microservices based application which can interact with each other and thereby providing capabilities so as to have these different reliable services implemented in your application. Now again, the choice of using reliable services versus the reliable actors again depends on what is the application need and what is how you would want to develop these microservices application against the Azure Service Fabric. Again, that being said, these are the not only two that you would want to use. You can actually use any of the EXEs, any language for that matter, any programming model that you are used to. Just make sure it is packaged as an application and it basically gets deployed into the Service Fabric cluster as with the default APIs. Okay. Now that we have actually talked about these APIs and we have seen different how these applications work, let's quickly jump on to a demo understanding how does it work when it comes to using it with the Visual Studio, and how do you basically develop this particular microservices based application. Let me quickly open up this, the Visual Studio, which is a 2015 version that I have run over here. And I also installed this Azure Service Fabric SDK. Once I install this, as with any type of projects, I would just do a new project. And since I've installed the Service Fabric SDK, it basically adds up this list of the Service Fabric application template into my cloud repository. And I can basically define the application name that I would want to. Let me just click on OK here. And this is the window that it comes up. And basically, there are different, as we talked about, the different programming models in our slides. These are the different services, basically the reliable service being a stateless versus a stateful. Or let's say you would want to use an actor service. And this is the template that you might want to go about. And for the purpose of this demo, I'll probably choose a stateful service, and I'll just say OK over here. Now, what it basically does is we'll walk through these different particular application, this default template application that is created, and it also brings up a documentation about how do you go about creating and what are the next steps. For now, we'll just ignore this, and we'll look into the solution explorer that it has created this application. As you would see with this application view over here, it has created two different projects under your solution over here. The main application is nothing but the application which is representing that, okay, how many microservices based application is going to be deployed against your application, and the next stateful one application that you are seeing in this list is the actual microservice application, which is going to define the logic that you're going to write in that application. For example, if I just open the class, the stateful class over here, that is available over here, I'll just scroll down over here, which implements the stateful service. The reason I've seen this is over here is because I've used a stateful reliable service API, and it basically implements two main methods, which is a create service replica listener. Now this particular method is a point point where you would want to define listeners for your particular service. Let's say, you know, for let's say an HTTP based listener, where if you would want to expose this microservices for the other services in the application to be talking to, or even for the external users to be able to talk to this application, this is the method that you would use to define those listeners. Now for that, for the demo purpose, again, I'll leave it as it is. I'll just quickly run on to the next method over here, which is the run async method. Now this is the entry point for the application over here, which uses or implements the logic, the application logic, which is going to perform the stateful nature of whatever the application be it. Now for that purpose, as I talked about in the API, the reliable stateful service implements something called as reliable dictionary. And in this line of code, I have defined that reliable dictionary using something, with my dictionary name over here. And this is the dictionary that is able to maintain the state for the application that I'm going to run. And it's basically going to deploy this and then maintain the state of this particular service that I'm going to deploy. Let me just quickly walk through the other lines of code that are available over here. What this basically shows over here is, it is going to create a transaction, and it is keep going to write a particular counter, and then increment that counter value from zero, and then it keeps adding it over the time and time again. This is just an example over here, and it also implements something called as service event source, which is nothing but underneath it implements this the event tracing for Windows capabilities, so as to log any kind of messages from your application, and which would generally be helpful for understanding the flow of application, understanding where exactly the application has been going around. Now while looking into this application, we know that while this particular service comes up, it is going to keep adding these counter values, but we also know that this is a stateful service that we have created. And then how we are basically able to maintain that state using this reliable dictionary. Let me just basically try to run this application locally using the Visual Studio, and let's see what is the behavior that we observe here. Now while I try to debug this application locally, what it is going to do is, it is going to basically create a local cluster, deploy that local cluster on my machine, and run this application under the cluster. Now what exactly is that cluster? It is nothing but has an emulator as such. It is a real-time cluster. When I mean cluster, that in the presentation I showed about having a VM, set of VMs defined, predefined before I even deploy my application. So this is that cluster that is going to be created locally over here, that is running on the machine. And this is the same cluster, kind of a replica that it creates for the local development and debugging purpose. Now let me just quickly open that particular cluster. You can even go to this particular icon that comes in the taskbar here and right click on it so as to manage the local cluster, which basically brings up this particular view of the cluster, and this is a local cluster over here. Now the main view of this local cluster is, it defines a dashboard where it says how many nodes are running within the clusters and how many applications are running in that nodes. As you can see, basically it says that there are 5 nodes. This is a local cluster that I have created. So the local clusters are always created with these 5 nodes. And there is these 2 applications that is running. We'll look through each of these one by one. Now, when we say that there are 5 nodes, basically these are nothing but these Five different particular, it could be VMs, it could be containers, but as of now, all these are represented as five different VMs as such running on five different nodes. And when it comes to the applications, this is the node that represents the set of applications that are running within your cluster. And as we can see, when we ran this local application through the Visual Studio, it is basically named as application 4. And that is the application that will be basically deployed under the local cluster. Now, if I just try to expand the application that is deployed in this cluster, we'll see as to what exactly, if you see this, now the application 4 basically is the application that I had created using the Visual Studio, and it has one microservice defined under it called as stateful, and it is basically going to be deployed across these different nodes. Now, it is able to show these or deploy this particular application across three different nodes, because when I deployed this application, I have defined in the configuration that go and create three replicas of my data or three replicas of my service. That's the reason it is able to identify or create one primary and then two active secondaries copy of the data. And this is how it is able to maintain the state. Let's say for any reason the primary node comes down where the primary set of data is being maintained, the active secondary now becomes a primary, and then this is automatically taken care of by the service fabric. Now, the default application that we see here is a system, which is nothing but the default set of services that the service fabric provides, which is nothing but a cluster manager service. And this is the entry point, or this is the service that is responsible to orchestrate the application across the nodes that are defined in your cluster. And it makes sure that it is these microservices that are developed in your application are spread across different nodes that are defined over there. And the naming service is the service which is basically helps in providing name resolutions for individual services using the endpoints that are defined, like the HTTP listeners that have been created. This is a service that would basically help in communication within the microservices or even for the external communication as well. And there are other two services, namely the fault analysis and the failover manager. Now, these two services are generally, are responsible to identifying any kind of faults that are happening against the application, or even for that matter, the service fabric cluster itself, and it can identify those faults, and the failover manager can take over and move those corresponding services across different nodes in the cluster. And these are those intelligent services that is responsible to maintain the service fabric cluster as such. Now, to quickly walk through how exactly a failover happens, what I'm going to do is, as we saw, node one is maintaining a primary copy of the data of my stateful service. I'm going to go to the node one here, and I'm just going to perform an action which says restart, which means I'm basically inducing a restart into this particular VM, and I'm coming back into the service or the Visual Studio. Now, this Visual Studio, while you run it, it also brings up something called as diagnostic events. These events are basically shown in this particular table, in this window over here, because of the ETW logging that has been implemented in the application. And if I just quickly try to stop this events that are captured over here, and let me go back into the initial set of services before the stop was performed. If you see that right before there was this load balancing that has happened, this stateful service was running under something called as a node one, as we saw in the cluster manager or the cluster explorer, where it says that, okay, this is the node that was responsible in serving my primary copy of the service. Now, after we have performed a manual failover and the service fabric was able to move the primary copy into another node, which in this case, node three becomes my primary, as seen in this cluster. And if I go back into this particular events and look at the latest event over here, it is now able to identify that this is the node 3 that is responsible to serve the stateful particular microservice. And as you can see, even though there were failovers happening, it is able to maintain those counter information across those failovers and maintain that state of that particular value. And it is going to keep incrementing those even though there have been faults that is happening within the cluster. Now this is how, you know, we would basically have this application not very running on a local cluster as well. Now the same capabilities as such has been provided when it comes to deploying your microservice based application in the Azure. So let me quickly walk you through how do you basically do that. So this is the Azure portal that I have used over here, where I logged in with my subscription, and you would basically go ahead and create this Service Fabric cluster by basically creating by clicking on the new option over there, and then I choose the virtual machine. And I'll wait for it to load properly. Okay, now that the virtual machines list have come up, I'm going to basically choose a Service Fabric cluster out of that list, and I'm say that okay, this is the cluster that I'm going to create, and then deploy the application within it. Now this is the cluster that I'm going to create, and I'm going to give any name over here. So these are the parameters that you would want to define before while you create this particular cluster using the portal, and these are the credentials that I can use while basically deploying this particular cluster as such, and I can actually choose the region where I would want to run this cluster, and there are other type of configurations that you can actually define while creating this cluster. Like for example, your application can compose of front end and also some back end kind of services. So this node type count refers to that set of VMs that are going to create to run these microservices application in a set of different nodes, where each individual node represents a nature of the application that is going to be running. For example, if I choose a node type count as 1, I would then basically define the parameters for those node type, where I'm going to say, okay, this node type is going to be my front end. I'm going to basically choose the type of VMs that are going to be deployed against this. Based on the type that I'm going to choose, I can also choose the size of the VM that is going to be running on this particular cluster over here. And these size can be D or S or the standard D or the S. And however, if you basically go about choosing a gold tier, you can basically have a G series kind of VMs as well. And the next option that you would want to define is how many instances of this VM that you would want to deploy in this cluster. Now, the more and more scale you would want to perform and more durability you would want to achieve with this cluster, you can basically choose the higher numbers. There is no limit as such. Again, it can run hundreds and thousands of VMs, but it again depends on the service and the scale that you would want to achieve with this particular node type. And this diagnostic information helps in transferring the logs from the application or even the default the cluster itself into the storage account, which it is going to create internally as such. Once you define that, you can even define whether this cluster is going to be a secure or an unsecure cluster, which is a secure one is generally recommended when it comes to a production, and you would basically use a certificate that is available in a key vault, and you define that certificate information. And for now, if you just use unsecure for the testing purpose, this is how it will look alike, and it will basically validate the information that you have provided, and it will verify if those validation has been successfully performed or not, and all the parameters that are defined has the right information over there. And if I say okay, this is the time it is going to start creating the cluster with all the VM and the node types that are defined. To save quick time, I have just created a cluster, and I'm going to quickly jump to that cluster that I have created over here. And this is how my cluster would look like, where I have defined 3 different nodes that are running over here, which are spread across different upgrade domains. And I also deployed an application called as Visual Objects in this particular cluster, which is having these 3 different nodes. Now, as you can see, this cluster also provides the similar capabilities of a Service Fabric Explorer, which we have seen while deploying it into the local cluster, and the same can be browsed using this particular UI. And if I just manually navigate to that, this is how the same Explorer looks like as we have seen it when deploying it on the local cluster. The same view where it shows about having the application and the nodes that I have defined in my cluster. Now, the application that I have deployed over here is nothing but an reliable actor-based application, and having a web front end to that particular application. And I have defined how many partitions and how many replicas of each partitions has to be deployed. And it has basically spread across different nodes within my cluster. And it is also able to provide this particular application while I browse through the web front end, which is this part of the application. Now, this visual objects is nothing but it is an application which helps rotating these two objects, which is represented in a diamond format within this 2D view over here. And if you see, these applications are running within its own captured dimension, and it is not only it is rotating across the dimension, but it's also rotating within its own axis by changing the views as and when it is navigating across. Now, by deploying it using the Visual Studio, what it also helps is it helps in performing a faster upgrade, and the upgrade, whenever there's an upgrade that has been performed through the Visual Studio, it makes sure these upgrades are happening across the different upgrade domains that are spread across this clusters. And that is, I'm going to quickly walk you through how this upgrade happens. So I'm just going to change some piece of the code in this visual object application that I'm used, which is I'm going to just make the rotating piece of those diamonds in the 2D view from true to false. And I'm just using the Visual Studio publish option so as to deploy this application in the cluster that I've created over there. And now that my code have also been changed, I'm also going to define the configuration saying that there is this particular code which has basically changed my application, and that is where I'm going to deploy the application in the Azure environment using this change code. And I quickly just click on publish option, and that's where it is basically going to build the application locally and get the jobs done so as to publish this application in the cluster that I have created in Azure, which is nothing but it is going to have the application deployed across the same cluster that I have used, and in the three different nodes that are defined in that cluster. And the service, which is the actor service that I have used to demonstrate this visual object application, is going to be upgraded one after the other, thereby not affecting the views of the other actors that are running within that application. While the upgrade happens, let me quickly go back into the Service Fabric Explorer. While this shows me the behavior where the upgrade is happening, you can see this in the Explorer that there's information where it says there are upgrades happening, and since there are three different nodes, there are three different upgrade domains that are defined, and currently the upgrade is happening on the first domain while the application version is also being changed from the previous version to the next version. And also, while this application is being upgraded, as we see from the cluster over here, it also gives information if there are any warnings or any errors through this upgrade. And the Service Fabric makes sure if there is any upgrade failures happening, it rollbacks the application entirely to the starting point, and also not affecting the entire application at the same time. If we quickly go back, if you see that there are certain actors which have already changed to the newer version of the code, whereby it is not rotating in its own axis. Well, there are other actors which are rotating in its own axis, which are basically demonstrating the previous behavior of the application. And each and every actor is going to be upgraded as and when the application is being upgraded through different domains over there. While this cluster also provides this capability of deploying it across the cluster, what it also does is it provides certain set of storage accounts that we have defined while creating a cluster. It has these storage accounts created under the subscription where you can actually look into so as to perform any kind of troubleshooting that you would want to have. There are majorly three storage accounts that are created. One is the diagnostic storage account, which basically stores the information about the diagnostic events that are happening within that cluster, like if there is any kind of reliable actor events or the reliable service events that are happening. And there is another storage account which is responsible for displaying all the application related and each and every the cluster related logs being available in this table storage account. And the last storage account, the third one that is associated with the cluster, is responsible to maintaining the VHD files that are associated with the nodes that are defined in the particular cluster. This is how you would basically go about creating a cluster and deploying the cluster into the Azure nodes. And you know, this is what I mean, all I had about while I help show you how exactly the Service Fabric application is being deployed across the Azure cluster and even running on a local cluster as well.
All right, thank you, Puneet. So we have just few minutes left. I was trying to answer on the chat, so we are open for Q&A. Feel free to ask. Let me just go through some questions which are on the chat.
Or you can actually unmute your phone if you want to speak out. It's easier.
Yeah, I'm unmute now. Okay. So the first one was the Ekka.net. To be very fair, I don't have the current status as of now, but considering the very mature programming model, especially in, so I can definitely check that for this. I think GitHub may have the latest update. I didn't check actually. Now coming to the mic question. Okay, is there any migration conversation guidance for this? Okay, so the question is, you can split the your various entities into multiple, right? But what about the database? Is there any migration or conversion guidance on it? Very good question, actually. Well, if you can split the database in multiple, yes, you can, but that depend on if the application, if it's a centralized database for all the parts of the application, if they're writing, right? Then it may create the problem. I have never seen splitting the database in various different databases if you are using Service Fabric. Now coming to the next one. Can you explain the difference between microservices versus web job? I think I answered this. Web jobs are mainly for the background jobs where your website can perform any batch and batch processing, backend processing. Where the microservices are, they are the architecture style actually where you break your application in multiple parts to achieve high scale, rapid deployment, zero downtime, and so on. Coming to the next one. Do you have a rule of thumb for the level of system complexity, scale, etc., where microservices make sense as architecture pattern? Very good question. Puneet, you want to take it?
Right. Yep. Thanks. Sure. Yeah. I mean, basically, definitely. You know, when it comes to the inbuilt pattern that you would want to use about using that particular type of application architecture that you would want to know, based on whatever is the is the requirement of the application, you know, be it the reliable actors or the reliable services, these are the, you know, the major APIs that are exposed at a programming or at the application level, where, you know, having, you can choose either of this. There's no nothing has like, you know, one would only want to go with the reliable actors versus the reliable services. Again, not constrained to these APIs as such, but any of those that you would feel comfortable with and you know, you're good with it, you can actually bring that and run it on top of Azure Service Fabric. I hope that answers it.
All right, so next one is, it seems this pattern lends itself to service and data isolation. What model for data consistency are you advocating? Eventual consistency.
Okay, I think I can take that up again. So when you're talking about the data consistency, if you're talking about maintaining the state for a particular microservice-based application, the Service Fabric has that inbuilt capability, as we saw about how it creates these replicas across different partitions, and those datas across, even though there happens to be a failure in the primary replica, the secondary has the latest information of the primary by having an ongoing sync that it happens within the nodes that are running over there, and the data is consistent at a real time always, I could say.
Did you pick up the other question? Say, any guidance for creating geo-distributed service fabric cluster? Did you get that one? Using the traffic manager or maybe building a load balance can handle this.
Okay, yeah, I think, yeah, cool. Again, yes, traffic manager, the new resource manager-based traffic manager provides capabilities to have external endpoints defined where you can actually have this defined, you know, across geo-distributed service fabric clusters. Definitely a good question over here. Haven't tried it, but you know, that's definitely worth a try. And even for that matter, the any external load balancers that you can think of can be deployed on front of a service fabric cluster, and it can be used in that scenario. Even when it comes to having a microservice application, it need not necessarily be that you have a full stack of your application running in the microservices. It could be that the web front end is probably running in an app service environment, and your mission critical back end service of that application is residing in that microservice, being load balanced using any kind of other load balancing capabilities that are available.
Well, theoretically, with Azure Traffic Manager, it should work.